You've got a manifest witness here.
Stay on set. We had another battery for that. Great. Thank you, Pastor. Manifest there in verse 10 in 1 John chapter 3. To whom? In this the children of God are manifest. Well, in this the children of God are manifest to you, to these believers that John is writing to. He's saying by this, by love, by your working righteousness, and by loving your brother, you know who you can identify each other. And the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. And that goes back to things that we've looked at already in Hebrews about that planting. God plants and then the devil plants. And so how do you know which one is which? Well, this is it. So Hebrews 13 there, we're not going back there yet, says, let brotherly love continue. Keep reading here. Verse 13. Marvel not, my brethren, if the world hate you. We know that we have passed from death unto life because we love the brethren. So now, I know that I've passed from death unto life, being one of John's followers here, because I love the brethren. He that loveth not his brother abideth in death. So now here's a self-test. Not only can these believers look around at each other and consider one another and provoke one another to love and to good works, and let that be a manifestation of who these people are, but also I can know within myself as one of these kingdom saints. Am I where I need to be? And that is that's going to show itself. It's not, you know, when the Bible talks about love, it's not like so many things that the Bible talks about that the world kind of takes the same word and twists it and comes up with its own idea. When the Bible talks about love, it's not what the world tends to think about when it thinks about love. The world thinks about a good feeling, being fond of someone. And if you love someone, then you certainly would have a good feeling about them and would be fond of them. But the word love and the whole idea of love in the Bible is a far more practical concept. Love works. Love does things. And, you know, when the Bible talks about love, it doesn't talk much about how you feel about it. When it talks about love, it talks about what you're doing. And so, John goes on here, verse 15, whosoever hateth his brother is a murderer. And you know that no murderer hath eternal life abiding in him. By the way, you don't know that today, do you? Murderers have eternal life abiding in them today, don't they? Murderers get saved just like anybody else, right? Hereby perceive we the love of God. Now, that's not to say that a kingdom saint can't have killed someone. That's John's talking about someone who continues to be a murderer. Even there, that's different from today. Hereby perceive we the love of God, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren. See, that's what loving the brethren is talking about. Laying down our lives for the brethren. The Lord said, no greater love hath any man than this, that he should lay down his life for his friends. And then later on, Paul tells us that there is a greater love than that, because while we were enemies, Christ died for us. So we ought to lay down our lives, John says, for the brethren. But whoso hath this, now watch it, whoso hath this world's good, and seeth his brother have need, and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwelleth the love of God in him? My little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed, and in truth. And hereby we know that we are of the truth, and assure our hearts before him. So this idea of let brotherly love continue is is not telling these Hebrew believers to just everybody feel good about each other and everybody, you know, hug when you come in the door and all of that. That's all well and good. It's all fine. But the idea there is far more real, far more practical, much more sacrificial. Love takes a lot of work. John says, if you've got this world's good and your brother needs it and you don't give it to him, well, how dwelleth the love of God in you? Look back in James, a couple books to your left, James chapter 2. Now these, again, these kingdom saints are going to are in some dire straits and it's going to get worse for them, prophetically speaking. And they're going to need that community support for one another. Now you and I, you know, we come here together and we're a community and we need community support too, right? We talk to each other, tell each other our needs and desires and hopes and dreams and all of that stuff. And Paul says, you know, rejoice with them that rejoice. Weep with them that weep. Be, you guys are one body, Paul says. You know, act like one body. When, I get a sliver in one hand, and my other hand comes over, doesn't ask questions, doesn't think about it, doesn't complain and whine and moan. It just comes over instantly, grabs that sliver, and pulls it out of there. Because they're two members of the same body, and they're both controlled by the same head. So when this one's in pain, this one responds. And there's no question, quarrel, quibbling about that. It just is. Well, that's our situation, to be members of the same body, to alleviate one another, and rejoice with one another. For these folks here, it's the same way, and there is that very practical aspect to it here in James chapter 2 again, very similar to what John just said in verse 15, James 2. 15, if a brother or sister be naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you say unto them, depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled, notwithstanding you give them not those things which are needful to the body, what doth it profit? See, I have good feelings about you. I got great affection for you. I'm fond as crazy of you. Be ye warmed and filled. Send them away hungry. Well, what did you do? You say, well, I loved the brother. No, you didn't. So, here, come... Look at some Pauline references here. Come to 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Got to go there if we're going to talk about love, right? 1 Corinthians chapter 13. You know, that list of things there in Hebrews 13, those first several verses. Let brotherly love continue. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers. Remember them that are in bonds, as bound with them, and those that are afflicted. All of those things there are things that those Hebrew believers need to be proactive in doing. Because you can just go through life and not doing anything you're not supposed to, not sinning, abstaining from all the right things that you're supposed to abstain from, and disobey every one of those verses. Because every one of those verses requires them to look for opportunities. Be not forgetful to entertain strangers. So if I just don't think about it, just go through my life living, you know, righteously and not doing what I'm not supposed to be doing, but I'm not thinking about what I am supposed to be doing, I can go through life forgetting to entertain strangers, right? Disobey that verse. Letting brotherly love continue is the same thing. I can go through my life not hurting anyone, never doing anyone any harm. In absolute disobedience to that, to that verse and to that general commandment of Scripture, because it takes me stepping out, doing things that I don't necessarily need to do, putting myself out of my way, looking for opportunities. It's what Paul calls being zealous of good works. Where can I step in? Well, looking for an opportunity. And when you see it, stepping in. Like I said, we can go through life not thinking about these things and just living, you know, unsinfully, and yet not obey any of those things. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. So my point to you is that love works. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not charity, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not charity, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not charity, it profiteth me nothing. So James says, what does it profit, right? Paul here says, and here in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and in many other places, the King James translators choose the word charity for the word agape. And charity really kind of communicates what we're talking about better in our modern vernacular than the word love does. Because charity is love working. Charity is love doing. Charity is love in action. So you can get the wrong idea about that word love in its modern usage, but charity's still charity. Charity is still what it is. And now, just to remind ourselves that still this is not just about outward performance, and it's not first about outward performance. It's not primarily outward performance. Paul says in verse 3, though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor and don't have charity. Well, isn't that pretty much the definition of charity, bestowing your goods to feed the poor? Well, Paul says you can do that outward thing. You can give away all your stuff and not have charity. And he says you do that, and it profits you nothing. So don't forget, it's not the outward. But that inward working ought to be working out. So, verse 4, charity. What is charity? Charity, you know, notice as you go down through this list, every single one of these things is something that love does or doesn't do. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity, you know, that suffering long, that goes into be not forgetful to entertain strangers. You know, there's in these times and in that tribulation time, that takes on a kind of a whole meaning of its own, entertaining strangers. But, you know, having people in your house that are not normally a part of your family is one, and one of the major putting yourself out. And you know that if you've had long-term guests in your home. Not that they're, you know, bad people or that they're, you know, anything like that. It's just a disruption to your life, and you need to make accommodation when you do that. You need to, entertaining, being hospitable, which Paul also tells us to be. Letting hospitality be a part of your life is a tremendous practice and exercise, spiritual exercise in love, in putting yourself aside for the sake of someone else. Because nothing puts you aside like having someone staying in your home. And you know that if you've had that. And, you know, Solomon He says to the guest, he says, remove your foot from your neighbor's house, because pretty soon you're going to wear out your welcome. And that's wise advice. But, you know, we don't practice hospitality the way people did in Bible days. The verse there says, and we're not done with love yet, but the verse there says that for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. And that kind of takes your mind back there to Abraham and a Lot in particular. In Sodom, the two men come in and they're going to sleep in the street. And Lot goes out there and he says, you can't do that. Come into my house. And they didn't want to, and he pressed upon them. He said, you got to come and stay with me. You can't lay out here in the street. See, that's that... that hospitality. Lydia was like that with Paul. He says she pressed upon us greatly to come and stay in her home. See, that's having a heart of hospitality. I've got an opportunity. I've got space here that I can let you use. Come use it. Don't leave my ability unused. Don't leave what I have to offer untaken. See, that's a heart of love. That's when, you know, Peter says, use hospitality, but not grudgingly. See, that's the idea there. I can't let you stay out in the street. And of course, Lot entertained angels by doing that and saved him and his family from that type back there in Sodom and Gomorrah of that tribulation period that these people are going into. So, but hospitality, no, I'm not telling you to let strangers off the street come and stay in your house. There's an element of foolishness to that today. But, I'll tell you what, you can help strangers in many ways. There's more ways to entertain a stranger than to have them come and stay at your house. I myself, you know, people argue, and Christians have different ideas about people on the street. Should you give them money? Shouldn't you give them money? There's arguments for both sides. I myself have decided that if I'm able, I'm going to do it. And that's one way to help a stranger. Would I let those same people come and stay in my house? Probably not. Like I said, you need to be sensible. But there's ways that we can help. 1 Corinthians 13. Charity suffers long. That's what got me off on hospitality. You got to be long suffering if you're going to have people staying in your home. I do, by the way, have people staying in my home. They're not strangers, but I always seem to, for, you know, somehow. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. So the passage in Hebrews is going to go on to say, let your conversation be without covetousness and be content with the things that you have. Well, that's love. Charity envieth not. Charity's not looking at my... You know, the whole idea of keeping up with the Joneses, it's all about envy, isn't it? It's all about envy. It's all about covetousness. It's all about discontentment. It's all about pride. It's all about show. It's all of those things that love isn't, and that love doesn't do. So if I love my neighbor, my inclination is not to be to try and keep up with them. Try and help them out. Hey, that's a great new car you bought. You know what? I just got a new ShamWow, cost me a little less than your car did, but you're more than welcome to use it. Shine that car up, make it look nice next door to my silly little mobile. Charity suffers long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up. It's not prideful. doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil. Now, we're not teaching this passage here. What we're seeing in these things is that charity, love, works. Rejoices not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. And that verse 7 there, that's talking about people. We bear all things in people. We believe all things about people. Believing all things doesn't mean you believe everything you hear. You know better than that, right? We don't believe a lot of stuff. Most of the stuff that's taught out there, you don't believe. When it says believe all things, it's talking about people having thinking well of people, thinking good of people. Let your default position toward people. You know, Will Rogers, right, said, was famous for saying, "I never met a man I didn't like," and what he meant by that was not that I like everybody. What he meant by that was I start out liking you. When I meet you, I like you. I like you before I meet you. Now, if you turn me against you later on, then that's something else again. But that's a good philosophy to have. Let your default position toward people be positive. We understand that we're all depraved and we've all got a deceitful, wicked heart and all of that kind of stuff. But charity believes all things, hopes all things. Even if I know a person to be a scoundrel, maybe down the road he won't be. See, that's love. And then love treats people with that, with the manifestation of that heart attitude. Endures all things, charity never faileth. So, with that, Hebrews chapter 12 again says, let brotherly love continue, because charity never faileth. Now, for these brethren in particular, and we've mentioned this already too, you know what? I think we've mentioned it once or twice, but we haven't actually looked at it. Come back to Matthew chapter 24. Let brotherly love continue. Matthew chapter 24. Sometimes in this book of Hebrews, I have to kind of strain to find the application for you and me. And we're teaching the book as it's written in its context. Doctrinally, it's written to those Hebrew believers. That's how we teach it. But you want to try and get some practical application out of it as you go along. Here, it's kind of the other way around. When you start talking about love, I mean, what's not to apply, right? But there are some things still in that passage and in the way it's worded and in the context in the book that you find it in there at the end, after all of those statements leading up to it, that are very specific to these people at this time that they're living in. Matthew chapter 24, verse 12 and 13. You want to have that along with Hebrews 13:1. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. You know, we quote that verse a lot. He that shall endure unto the end, the same will be saved. But the context of that is the verse that comes before it. Because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall not continue, shall wax cold. So Hebrews says, let brotherly love continue, endure to the end. Remember what John said, if you're a child of God, this is going to be the manifestation of it. If this is not the manifestation, well, whose child are you? And that's, those lines are that clear cut in this time. And that, you know, iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. Come back to Deuteronomy chapter 18, and I hesitate to give this kind of stuff to you on a Sunday morning, but we see each other so infrequently. Deuteronomy what did I tell you? 18? I think it's going to be 28. Way over at the end. Deuteronomy 28. Talking about Moses is warning the children of Israel if they don't obey things that are going to happen to them, and he talks about being taken away into captivity. And verse 52, Deuteronomy 28:52, "And he shall besiege thee in thy gates until thy high-fenced walls come down, wherein thou trustest throughout all thy land, and he shall besiege thee in all thy gates throughout all thy land which the Lord thy God hath given thee. And thou shalt eat the fruit of thine own body, the flesh of thy sons and of thy daughters, which the Lord thy God hath given thee, in the siege and in the straitness wherewith thine enemies shall distress thee." Now, this is just talking about Israel being taken away captive in the history of the Old Testament that we see. And we see this kind of thing happening in the books of Kings and that kind of thing. But this time that these Hebrew believers are entering into is a time like this world has never seen before, so much worse. Verse 54, "So that the man that is tender among you and very delicate, his eye shall be evil toward his brother, and toward the wife of his bosom, and toward the remnant of his children, which he shall leave, so that he will not give to any of them the flesh of his children, whom he shall eat, because he hath nothing left him in the siege and in the straitness wherewith thine enemy shall distress thee in all thy gates." So, you're doing that, and then you won't share that. Like I said, we'll just read it. Verse 56, "The tender and delicate woman among you, which would not adventure to set the sole of her foot upon the ground for delicateness and tenderness, her eyes shall be evil toward the husband of her bosom, and toward her sons, and toward her daughter, toward the young one that cometh out from between her feet, toward her children, which she shall bear." And then it goes on and talks about that again. So the idea of the most loving people this time is going to turn, and turn in a big way. "Because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold." See, that's, I bring you to this passage to give you the idea. We can hear a statement like that, and we look out in the world today and we say, "Yeah, see, I just told you, I wouldn't go letting strangers into my house for the most part." Why? Because iniquity abounds. Well, that's a shame. See, but we don't know anything like what these people are going to be going through. When you talk about, "because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold," this is the kind of thing. It's in the face of this that the writer tells those believers, let brotherly love continue. Don't let this make your love go cold, because you need to endure to the end. Yes, sir.
There's an example of that in those places in Mississippi, and that when the floods came, people had to buy guns to protect their own home from their neighbors.
From their neighbors, yeah.
Gave them and take what they
had. Yeah. Yeah, in the
same people that would help somebody.
Right. Adversity can do that. It brings out the best and the worst in people, and that's a good illustration in that passage in Hebrews. There, the whole idea, and we got to quit. We won't We won't be mad because we spent our whole time talking about love, will we? The whole idea there is, remember those that are in adversity because you too are in adversity. And what you're talking about is true. You see it all the time. Someone's in adversity, and rather than letting it create and foster compassion for others who are in adversity, we're going to go and we're going to take their stuff. So, you know, because I lost my stuff, rather than weeping with them that weep, we work it the other way around. And the Lord's call is don't let these things harden you. Don't let the crime and the corruption and those things take away your trust. Be sensible, be reasonable, don't be foolish. But don't let that stuff destroy you. Going through, you know, you're better off going through life doing what 1 Corinthians 13 said, believing all things, hoping all things, enduring all things, and getting taken advantage of every once in a while, than to go through life just guarded, just taking the attitude that everyone is out to do me harm, and just putting up a wall. Maybe you'll never get taken advantage of, but you're destroying yourself doing that. Don't let abounding iniquity, you know what Paul says about abounding iniquity? The Lord there says, because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. Paul says, where sin abounded, grace did much more abound. That's God's response, and that ought to be ours. What you got, boy?
Yeah, like you're saying here, the admonition to let brotherly love continue is made in the context either of the historical reality of the oncoming 70 AD destruction of
right.
the temple, or if you can or apply it to the tribulation. Of course, in those particular situations, it's going to be a judgment, supernatural or providential, from God Himself. And in those times of trouble, we most have tendency to focus on ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Trouble comes, is that my house burning over there?
Right.
My house get flooded, or so forth and so on.
Yeah.
So, and then contrastingly, in Corinthians, it's not because of a supernatural judgment that they weren't exercising brotherly love, but because the manifestation of those gifts that distracted them into.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's right.
Do we live in the transitional period of the Book of Acts, or are we looking for the? Are we living in a time when Israel is going? You know, our city or our nation is going to be destroyed. So we don't have those outward manifestations to give us any kind of motivation. The only thing we're left with, like 1 Corinthians maintains, is the purity of God's grace to motivate us
right.
to manifest brotherly love for one another.
Very good point. Very good point. It is purely internal, isn't it? As far as the working of God. Yeah. Very good. Very good. And that is that's the motive and the power of motion that we're left with, because that's where God wants it to come from, for you and for me. So we don't have anyone kicking us in the behind, although, you know, hopefully we're considering one another to provoke to love and good works. But be looking, be zealous. Again, you can go through life without doing anything wrong, and a whole lot of stuff that you're called to do right, you won't do either. Not unless you're looking for the opportunity. Yes, sir?
They would have experienced in Deuteronomy 28.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that provoking them to become cannibals? Is that what he was saying?
The idea there of the siege, do you remember up the road? I guess it's not from my house. It's up the road over at Starved Rock there.
Right.
You know the story. The Indians there, Native Americans, had a war between themselves, and the one tribe ran the other tribe up the rock, and just camped out there at the bottom until they all starved to death. That's the idea, that they're going to besiege the city and they're just going to be left to eventually turn to cannibalism.
That's what I understand.
Yeah.
Because sin will abound. You know what I mean? That much that they will revert to cannibalism.
Yeah. In 1 Kings, there's an account where a woman comes to the king with a complaint, and her complaint is that yesterday my neighbor and I agreed that we would eat my son last night and then hers tonight, and I kept my part of the bargain, and now she's hid her son. She won't share him with me. And that night, some guys are, because they've got enemies surrounding them, or so they think. That night, a couple of fellas in the gate who are about to die anyway say, you know, what's the point of sitting around here? And they go out to give themselves up to the enemy and find out that the enemy has fled. They're gone. And the whole town goes in, and all of a sudden they've got all the food that they want the day after that. You know.
I'm doing so well, I do all these things already. I'm very charitable and loving and giving and kind. And they never say to themselves, I would never do anything like that. I would shoot myself first before I would allow myself.
Yeah.
You know, today, everyone is so enthralled with their own intelligence.
Yeah.
And their own way they feel about how things should be. And we think very highly of ourselves because we know so much about what was done before us. And, you know, even people who have studied the Bible and they know, you know, these things happen, so I know not to ever do that. And my conscience is going to bother me, and I could never do that. And I believe, and my understanding is that what Paul is saying is, let it continue. Okay, you're saying that now, but when the time comes, let it continue.
Yeah.
Don't think so highly of yourself that you wouldn't do this. Let it continue, because there will come a time where you will be faced with that decision.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to just tell yourself, all right, that person does need my help. I may have enough for 3 days, but I may also be able to spread it out a little thinner and share it with them.
Right. Right.
So why am I going to go out and buy a gun to protect when I can say, well, you know what, you don't have it. Come in and take it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come in and we'll share it.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not going to last forever.
Yeah, and that's an excellent, excellent. And that's kind of the point there of Deuteronomy 28, is that people who you would least expect, the most tender and delicate and loving person, put in that situation, in the right situation, would do things that they would never have dreamed, or anyone would ever dream that they might do. And you're right, it's easy to say now, but when you're actually in that situation, it needs to be just as real and even more so. Yes, sir.
In the same way, it can be reversed. Some lady that is very delicate and very elite could bring that person into my house.
Mm-hmm.
It could be totally reversed.
Yeah. Very true. Very true. Yes, sir.
Our brother Paul is a chief example of charity and love.
How so?
Because he put himself last, okay, and everyone else first.
Mm-hmm.
He put everyone paramount above himself.
Yeah, and of course he was following the example of Christ.
And
yeah.
That's why we should follow Paul as he followed Christ.
Yeah, spend and be spent. That's that's his definition of loving the brethren.
Yeah.
Thanks, y'all.
Very poignant. Thank you, Dave.
Poignant. I don't think I've ever been poignant before.
Poignant.